Hello, this is Pastor Ken Ortiz, and this is really a kind of a special supplement or update to my series of messages called What the World Coming To. And what I wanted to do is something that I promised I would do several months ago when the COVID epidemic just began to take place or began to expand and impact our lives. And I said that as we find out more information, I would try to update you in terms of my view. Especially at that time, I mentioned how that I felt that it was a good idea to take the vaccine, at least the Pfizer and Moderna versions of it, because they didn't use fetal tissue. Well, that's not the case, actually, and a lot of what I want to talk about today is really updating a lot of the information that we've gained over the last several months, things that we didn't know 20 months ago. I kind of want to begin actually with a disclaimer, first of all, that this is going to be probably longer than my usual supplements because I have a lot of information I want to communicate to, and I feel like there's so much confusion and misinformation and disinformation out there that I found it for myself very, very difficult to sort through and kind of come to my own conclusions. Now, I want to tell you that I'm not an anti-vaxxer, nor am I a medical professional. These are my opinions, just that. And but they are based upon a lot of months of prayer and study, which is why I do have some severe reservations, maybe even deep concerns about the COVID vaccine. But let me begin, first of all, by kind of putting vaccines in general in kind of some kind of historical perspective. One of the things that Jesus warned about in Luke 21, he said there will be great earthquakes in various places. He said in various places there will be plagues and famines, and there will be terrors and great signs from heaven. We know that throughout the history of the world, there have been many, many plagues, many, many pandemics. In fact, we find that probably about every decade or two, the entire global population would be reduced by 10, 20, or 30% by the outbreak of some kind of pandemic. Sometimes they were viral, sometimes they were bacterial, like we find with the Black Plague that spread through Europe and led to the death of probably 30% of the Europeans and literally drove them back into the Dark Ages. During that time, it's ironic because the Muslim countries really expanded quite a bit in the vacuum that was created by Europe's dealing with this plague that had killed off so many people, and many of them the leading minds of the day. It didn't seem to be very selective. It's killed everybody equally. That's one thing you found about death and plagues, is they tend to be pretty democratic. But we also read that in the book of Revelation that this will be one of the things that marks the events, especially we have the seven last plagues that are spoken of in chapter 9 and other places. Basically, we're told a third of mankind will be killed by these plagues. And then it says again that the rest of mankind who were not killed by the plagues did not repent. So we see that plagues in that context are really an expression of God's judgment. And that's always the question mark. Is a plague that comes upon a country the consequence of sin and therefore God's judgment? Or is it just the natural order of things? Well, we find that the Bible seems to tell us both those things, that these things are part of the result of a broken and fallen world, but they also can be used by God to bring judgment upon a people who have become resistant to listening to his voice. So, basically, overall, we found that in the beginning, in the late 19th century, early 20th century, and up until the present, we've been really blessed in many ways by the development of vaccines. As one writer put it very clearly, he said the evidence for the safety and effectiveness of vaccines routinely given to children and adults in the United States is overwhelmingly favorable. And I know that I grew up during the polio epidemic, pandemic really, and I was thankful to get the polio vaccine because I had family members and friends who contracted that disease and suffered tremendously as a consequence, basically had lifelong consequences that they had to deal with. So, you know, I'm not against vaccines. And I also want to make it clear that I'm not one of those people who believes that the COVID-19 virus is unreal. I think it's very real. But the simple point is that 99% of those who become ill will recover, although there will be people who've had serious lingering health issues, the damaged hearts and lungs and other things. And this is not to say that some people who get the virus won't become very sick. In fact, I know people who have become extremely ill because of the virus, especially this new Delta variant, and some have actually passed away. So I can tell you, I don't want to contract it. I have no illusions about how ill and how sick somebody can be if they come under the or contract the virus. So I would basically, and I'll explain to you how I would respond to it if I do become ill. But why are there so many concerns today about the vaccine and how it's being and how the virus is being dealt with? Well, I think number one, we have to realize that we're dealing today with a bioweapon. That is, it's a biological weapon. We refer to it as a novel virus, but it was a virus that occurred naturally in nature, but was manipulated in a laboratory in the Wuhan lab in China with what's called an increase of function experiments. And that's the idea, is to take a virus that's already potentially dangerous and make it very dangerous, to turn it into a biological weapon for biological purposes. Now, this is a violation of the Geneva Code, which basically says that, you know, chemicals and biological variant are basically viruses and things of that nature cannot be used. It's a violation of international law. It's kind of sad because we know now that Dr. Anthony Fauci, who is the highest paid government official and supposed to be, as he's often advertised, is our lead epidemiologist, infectious disease doctor in the country, which I think is a ridiculous comment. But nonetheless, he was very complicit in helping to fund the research because he said very clearly back in 2012 that he felt it was essential. And part of the reality is that there's many people are driven by a profit motivation that they can gain through the things that are discovered. So that's really the first issue. We are dealing with a bioweapon that was introduced in the world, whether accidentally, probably, or even possibly purposely, but nonetheless, it's had a devastating effect upon people's health and welfare. Secondly, what has really made it difficult is the dishonesty that we've had to deal with, whether it's being China refusing to admit or to cooperate in any kind of effort to find out the true source, whether it's been the World Health Organization or the NIH, which have been tremendously influenced by China, and or even the Biden administrations and many of the World Health Organizations, beginning with the fact that they lied about the source and cause, saying it occurred naturally from Chinese bats. And this is why it's properly called the Chinese Communist Party virus, the CCPV, because they created it and they are responsible for its spread around the world. As we all know now, that when they prohibited travel around China, they allowed people from China, especially Wuhan, to travel all over the world and carry the virus with them. The third reason why it's been difficult for people is there were many false projections when we discovered the virus is spreading. London's Imperial College, their foremost computer modelist, if you will, Neil Ferguson, created a computer model that we now know was not really very well done. And he was projecting to the world what the effect of the CCP virus was going to be. And he scared everyone to death. He predicted there would be 2 million deaths in the United States and 200 million at least worldwide. Now everybody admits that his model was outdated and wildly inaccurate, and by a factor of about 10. So, you know, this really started an overreaction around the world that led to the lockdowns and the panic that kind of spread with throughout the world. The fourth thing that has made this controversial or an issue is that we found that the CDC engaged in what we call statistical manipulation. They exaggerated the death toll by a factor of about 10. In fact, Alex Berenson, who is a New York Times journalist and who is recently banned for life from Twitter because he keeps on posting things that are inconvenient for those in power, as well as a friend of mine who is a IT tech and data analyst by the name of Chris Green. Both of them have presented really in-depth studies of the CDC's own data. And in part, what they found is that they have manipulated the data by changing the rules and how an epidemic really spreads. They excluded what we call comorbidity factors. In other words, that anyone who was tested for COVID antibodies, whether they were active or not, was, and if they died, they were called a COVID death. Here in the state of Washington, they had to take six people off the death list because they not only had COVID, tested positive for COVID, but they also tested positive for gunshot wounds, which took their life. So it was obvious that they didn't die of COVID, and yet they were trying to pass him off. And there's clear evidence that that's been done to a great extent, even to a factor of about 10, as I said, that instead of looking at 600,000 deaths, we're probably looking at more like 60,000 deaths, which would put it in the same category as most seasonal flus. So again, we find that when they changed the way that they measured or identified someone who had COVID, the CDC was violating their own regulations and their own legal guidelines, and they began to do something that had never been done before because it isn't an accurate way of representing the real impact. Legally, they're supposed to submit this to two different groups that would evaluate it, governmental agencies who would then approve or disapprove the changes. They just simply ignored that and went ahead and changed the designation. Because there is not the ability or the willingness to allow any kind of investigation, we really don't know what was the basis for that change, but we suspect it wasn't good. Fifthly, I'd say that the confusion that the CDC and the FDA have really put forth in their contradictory guidelines and statements has caused people to really obviously not trust what they say because they don't seem to know what they're saying half the time. And when somebody's saying something that doesn't make sense, it doesn't make sense because we're missing some of the sense. And there's a growing feeling that there's a purposeful effort to withhold or manipulate information to further some other unexpressed agenda item. For example, we were told that masks don't work, and then we were told they do, and then we were told they don't, and then we were told not only they do, but we should wear two or three. And it's interesting because if you look at a box of face masks that are commonly distributed by stores that you go into, they clearly state on the box that the masks are not designed or intended to prevent, mitigate, treat, diagnose, or cure any disease or health condition, including COVID-19 virus. As one doctor pointed out, he says, if you can smell smoke through your mask, you've got to realize that a virus which is significantly smaller, 1,000 times smaller, is having no trouble passing through your mask and into your nose, your mouth, and your bodily biological system. So the question would be, what are masks good for? Well, if you're infected and you are coughing and sneezing, a mask will stop many of the droplets from being expelled from your mouth into the air. Not all of them, but some of them. It can mitigate it to some degree. So I would say that if you have a cough and you're sneezing due to some kind of infection, whether it be the flu or the COVID virus, you should probably wear a mask to reduce exposure for other people. But they will not keep you from being exposed. You, especially if you're in an enclosed setting with other people who are, spewing out the virus, you will come in contact with it, and a mask will not protect you from that. So when you're on the airplane and people say, well, you know, I'm glad that people wear their mask, all I can say is you have more protection from the HEPA filters that the airline uses to circulate the air than you do from the masks that the people around you are using. So this is where, it becomes kind of maddening because, again, we're not following the science. We're simply following the guidelines of the CDC that make no sense many times. Well, the sixth concern we have is that the mRNA vaccines, using RNA to create a vaccine, has something that's been underdeveloped for about 3 decades. It's not new. In fact, Robert Malone, the doctor who was really the original inventor of this kind of vaccine, has really said, basically we need to be careful with them because they are very new and they are largely untested. In fact, this is what's kind of scary because we as individuals in society who have been receiving the vaccine are the test market. And when you understand that that it takes up to 7 to 10 years, according to John Hopkins Medical Center, that it takes 7 to 10 years to fully vet a vaccine to know how safe or unsafe it is. We find that this vaccine was developed in 7 to 10 months, and we have become the experimental group, and nobody knows what the long-term effects are going to be, because many vaccines have many undisclosed long-term effects that nobody knows about. Now, there's a lot of people speculating or claiming that they know what those things are, but the truth of the matter is we won't know probably for another 5 to 10 years what the real long-term effect is going to be, especially upon young people who are still developing physically. For those of us who are older, maybe it won't make any difference. We'll be gone, but we know that it's going to have a negative effect, or a very possibly negative effect that had not been anticipated, but because that's almost always the case. Number 7, we find that there is this emergency use stipulation in our law, which says that ordinarily if a patient is dying and has no other medical options and their death is eventual and imminent, then they can use experimental drugs to see if it can help to stave off the cancer or whatever the disease is. My daughter-in-law's mother was subjected to this one of these recently, and we think it probably killed her quickly. The point is that that's why they're experimental, because we don't know what the long-term or even immediate effects are going to be. Well, the current application of COVID vaccines to this standard of measurement is really a violation of what the law stipulated. I might add that COVID, though dangerous to some with specific vulnerabilities, that over 99% of those who become affected will recover and will develop natural immunities, which are more effective than the vaccines. Which brings me to number 8, and that's the issue of lockdowns. Lockdowns are clearly ineffective unless they're for a very short time, like 2, maybe 3 weeks, and only in the case where there has been a super spreader event. Beyond that, it has no long-term good effects. It has lots of negative effects, as we see today, that there are many people who will have physical, mental health, emotional impacts because of these lockdowns that have been clearly demonstrated to be more destructive than constructive. That number 9, the denial of natural immunities. I mean, it's interesting because CDC and FDA haven't said they aren't effective. They just ignored it. And they've acted as if the only way you can address a pandemic or an epidemic is to vaccinate people. Right now, according to a lot of measurements and studies, it's believed that up to half of Americans have acquired natural immunity because they've recovered from COVID. And we know, according to the Israeli studies and other studies, that those who have already had COVID are 6 to 13 times more resistant and are almost 99% less likely to become reinfected with COVID-19. So I know people who have had COVID and they've recovered, and now they say, well, I'm going to get the vaccine because I don't want to get it again. That's really unnecessary and could be possibly unhealthy. But because that's one of the reasons, say, that if you've recovered, you can't get the vaccine for at least 3 months after you've recovered. Why? Because it may actually prompt another infection. So when you combine these natural immunities with that of those who have already been vaccinated, as Dr. Marty Makary has pointed out, that we've already reached herd immunity in the U.S. of 80 to 85% who have the antibodies, whether natural or injected. Yet we find that our health officials simply want to ignore this fact. Let me read you something that Dr. Marty Makary, who is a professor at the Bloomberg School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, and is considered one of the leading authorities on these kind of medical situations. Basically, in a recent interview, he excoriated the public officials for denying the reality of natural immunity to COVID-19. And And he said this, he said, one of the biggest failures of our current medical leadership is ignoring natural immunity. He explained that the CDC's numbers on those who have contracted COVID-19 infections are actually artificially low, giving a false impression of the spread of the virus and herd immunity that's already arisen therefore. In other words, what he's saying is that when people go and test it and they have a positive test, it's because they have the antibodies, but they may have recovered, and that's why they have the antibodies, and that's why they're showing no symptoms. And yet the CDC completely ignores them and says, cases, that's their favorite term. We have this many cases. Well, cases can be people who are actually actively ill, but more often it's people who have recovered and have had no, because they had no serious side effects. So he goes on saying, referencing some 30 million COVID infections cited on the CDC's dedicated COVID tracker webpage, he went on to say, those are just the people who are confirmed to have had the infection. He said it's probably five times higher, closer to 150 million in America. And he goes on to say only 0.6%, that's 0.6% of people who have had COVID ever get the infection a second time. So in other words, you have a microscopic chance of getting a second infection. And he goes on, it says that's when they're rounded, when they're rounded out, all the time, he says, basically, it's mostly healthcare workers who are subjected or exposed to COVID over and over again in situations where people are being treated for COVID. There is one exception that happened, I believe it was in New Jersey, where they suddenly said they had a super spreader, some like 250 men were reinfected after being vaccinated. But that they didn't tell you a lot about the details. They didn't tell you that what it was a annual meeting of a certain group of homosexuals who were engaging in a weekend-long orgy of kissing and having other sexual intimacy. And so suddenly they began to show positive signs of having COVID, not being ill with it, but just simply having it. They left off the detail that when people are exchanging fluids, there's a likelihood that they will also, a high, almost an absolute likelihood that they'll pass those the virus on to one another and reinfect one another. But yet none of those people became seriously ill. McCary went on to suggest that taking just one shot of a two-shot recommended vaccine is sufficient for protection against COVID-19. Dr. Robert Malone said the reason why they went to a second shot was because they didn't see the increase in antibodies quickly enough. But he said after 21 days, they found that the antibody level had risen and a second shot was not necessary, which is interesting because when people are getting the second shot, that's when they're having the side effects because their body now is having to become reinfected with a heavy dose of COVID-19 virus. So he goes, he says, when you get the second dose, it can knock you down and that getting the infection is like getting a second dose. So he basically said natural immunity works. Not only does it work, he said, because it could also be a lifelong immunity. And that's why he makes this amazing statement. He says, please ignore the CDC's guidance. Live a normal life unless you are unvaccinated and did not have the infection, in which case you need to be careful. But he said the CDC has become a slow, reactionary political agency. And this is particularly true when we talk about people under 25 years of age. They have an infinitesimal chance of becoming sick or of dying from COVID. It's almost non-existent. And so it's just absolutely unconscionable that they're pushing the vaccine on people who do not need it. That's, you know, that's really called, that's a violation of the Nuremberg Code, which was formed after the Nuremberg trials, saying that you can't use experimental drugs on people. Now, I know people will sit back and say, well, the FDA now has said that Pfizer's vaccine is no longer experimental. Can I just suggest to you the CDC just violated, or excuse me, the FDA has just violated its own rules and metrics for deciding whether or not something is safe? And again, I'm saying this has all the appearance of a politically motivated action, not based upon science or even best past practices. The 10th thing that bothers me, and I think bothers a lot of people, is that the denial of therapeutics. In other words, there are things that you can do besides getting a vaccine if you contract the virus. And they have proven to be highly effective and are being used all over the world. In places like Mexico, if you develop the virus, you go to a clinic and they'll give you these therapeutics free of charge. Things like hydroxychloroquine, which I have taken over the years. And every time I went to India, I took hydroxychloroquine, and so I wouldn't get the malaria. But it's not dangerous. It has absolutely no ill effects that anybody can trace. The same way with ivermectin, which was called the miracle drug, because there's never been one single evidence of somebody having side effects. Now, here's the thing that's really troubling, that the CDC and the FDA warn about these two drugs. And yet, when they talk about ivermectin, what they're talking about is going to the feed store and getting a horse dosage and taking the same dose that you would give to a horse. So that if you're a 200-pound man, you're taking the same dose as a 1,000-pound horse. Yeah, you're going to have side effects. You're going to overdose on the drug. So, I mean, it's just so disingenuous. It bothers me. And most people just see the headline say, CDC warns against ivermectin. And they say, oh, therefore, I don't want to trust it. They're not being honest. They've been politicized for over a decade and giving false information, and they're continuing to do it. There's also things like if you get cortisone, which is especially zinc with cortisone, it helps to speed the zinc into your body. It's zinc that breaks up the COVID virus, along with vitamin D, a lot of sunlight. And we also, it's interesting, when President Trump got the virus, they gave him monoclonal antibodies. And basically, this is an infusion that they gave to him that helped him to recover very quickly without any side effects. After that, the President Trump bought millions of doses of monoclonal antibodies and distributed them to all 50 states. And for some reason, no state is using them except for the state of Florida, where they've been given out about 10,000 doses and had almost immediate recovery rates of people who had been at risk and were in serious threat by the vaccine. So here's again, why aren't we using these therapeutics? And the answer is because they don't want us to. That's why number 11, the vaccines we're finding are actually and very possibly pushing the development of variants. That basically we know that pathogens evolve and that antibiotics breed resistance to bacteria. They say in the same way that vaccines can actually incite changes that enable diseases to escape their control. So we have, as with the Delta variant, we have people who are becoming extremely ill, even in some cases more than they did with the original Delta infection, or excuse me, the original Alpha infection of COVID. And we have coming down the line another one that's coming up from the South called the Lambda, which probably these viruses are also being spread by our open borders. In fact, the CEO of Pfizer most recently said in an interview that I read, he said that basically they anticipate that every 95 days there's going to be a new variant. And so they're prepared to develop a vaccine for every new variant. And I think to myself, what does this mean? That every 3 or 4 months, people are going to go back and get another vaccine? That basically we're going to begin to practice medicine by injection? And I have to wonder, doesn't this have some negative effect upon people's immune systems? Maybe some of you who understand these things more deeply than I do can answer that question. But this just seems like an insane process. Well, the 12th concern I have about the vaccine is that all of them are dependent upon fetal tissue. Originally, we were told that Pfizer and Moderna didn't use fetal tissue, and that was true in part. They didn't use it to develop the vaccine. That's what Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca have done. They took fetal tissue and they used it to develop the vaccine. But we know that Moderna and Pfizer used fetal tissue to test the safety of the vaccine. Now, that becomes a very, very old concern. Now, some have said This isn't a problem because the tissue was harvested not from recently aborted fetal tissue, but basically, and this is true, that all fetal tissue used today comes from two primary single sources, one from 1978, the other one from 1983. And the current tissue that they're using is really grown in the lab. It represents really thousands of generations of the multiplying of these original two cells that were taken from aborted babies back in 78 and 1983. So, I mean, there's a certain degree of truth in that. But the real issue comes back to the fact of, does that make it right? For some of us, that's really a question of conscience, that we're still talking about fetal tissue. Now, there are some people that are saying things that just simply aren't true. I mean, for example, they'll say, well, the number of the letters on the vaccine vials basically are the names and the numbers really back to individually aborted babies. That's simply, I don't know where that's come from, but I don't know, and I haven't been to find any evidence to support that. I simply believe it's not true. So I don't think that you're getting injected with John Doe's aborted fetal tissue, and therefore you're condoning abortion. And I also would say there's no evidence that they're inserting digital tractors in the vaccine. But I would also add, not yet. I mean, there certainly is things that, let me say that Microsoft and Bill Gates have an international patent, which really wants to be able to insert a digital tracker for cryptocurrency development and mining. But I don't have time to go into all the details on that. So that's a point. I don't think there are digital tractors in the vaccine, but I think that it's not out of the question that there will come a point. And that's always been my consideration, or my concern, is that it really encourages a greater compliance with the system. And that's a deep concern. So the question that many of us might have at this point is, why are they doing this? Why are they pushing this? And part of it, I think, simply is power. The Democrats use it to take power by creating so much fear that people wanted to get rid of Trump as if he was a lunatic that didn't know what he's doing. And so what we did is in our fear of Trump being a lunatic, we put a man who was cognitively disabled in the same position. I used to be concerned that, not wondering who is pulling the strings behind Joe Biden. Now what really concerns me is, if he's the one making the decision, we're really in deep weeds. But we find that across this country, at least, and I think it's in other countries, that many of those people who are in positions of power love the power that they've gotten. They've basically put aside their laws and their constitutions and given absolute dictatorial power to governors and prime ministers and presidents and so forth. And even we see groups like the CDC has been really slapped down by the Supreme Court for legal overreaches, as was the governor of California and other places, for doing things they had no legal right to do. But that's the problem. By the time it reaches the Supreme Court, the damage has largely been done. But I think that's part of it. These people love the power they have and do not want to give it up. The second issue is profit. I mean, Big Pharma has made obscene profits. Pfizer, in the first 3 months of this year, made 25% more income than they had made in the previous year. And if you add to that the benefits that have come to big tech and to global corporations, really, the only people that have been hurt are small businesses. And I wonder sometimes if that's not really the objective, the concentration of power in a smaller and smaller group of elites who then can begin to form world policy based upon their profit objectives and their power objectives. But thirdly, it may be simply part of what Paul warned about, is the strong delusion that would come in the last days. He said in 2 Thessalonians 2:9, he said, "The coming of the lawless one will be in accordance with the work of Satan, displayed in all kinds of counterfeit miracles, signs, and wonders." You know, it may be that the miracles of science are what we call the great wonders of our day. And he says, "But it results in every sort of evil that deceives those who are perishing." And it goes on to say, they perish because they refuse to love the truth and to be saved. And for this reason, God sends him a powerful delusion so that they will believe a lie. I'm really shocked at how fear-driven so many people have come. In fact, one medical periodical made the point. They said that what's driving it right now is the fanaticism, not science, governs the CDC's aggressive push to vaccinate everyone. They said it's just pure fanaticism. It has no really reasonable basis or logistical basis at all except to accomplish some unexpressed goal. Well, I better bring this to an end, but I have some final thoughts I want to share with you. That number one, right now, 60% of evangelicals have received the vaccine, and Christians are extremely divided on this issue. And I would just simply say, let's be wary of accusing, condemning, name-calling, criticizing, judging, condemning other people because they've got the vaccine or because they have not got the vaccine. I think we need to really embrace a little calmness, a little humility here. I've had people that have been told that they've received the mark of the beast because they got the vaccine. And I think that's really, that's abusive, quite honestly. I think it's theological, pastoral abuse to say those kind of things. You have absolutely no basis or right to say that. Secondly, whether you get the vaccine or not is a matter of personal conviction. And I would just simply say, pray about it and let your conscience be your guide. Quite honestly, my wife and I have prayed for months and months about it because I simply said, God, I don't want to get the vaccine and I don't feel like I need to get the vaccine. And I'm concerned the fact that they use fetal tissue, which is, for me, has become really a non-starter. That's my personal conviction. I just can't get around that issue in my own heart and mind. And so we've chosen not to get the vaccine, but I don't want you making your decision based upon my decision. I'm not going to take responsibility for the consequences of your choices. My wife and I quite honestly believe we already have the natural immunity. But if we do become ill, and that's always a possibility, I don't put it out the question. I've known other pastors who have become ill and some who have died. But we're going to rely upon God and we're going to rely upon therapeutics to help us recover from that and pray and hope that we don't have any severe damage. But in the end, we're in God's hands. And somehow as Christians, we've pushed this one out of God's realm of responsibility. If that doesn't work, if we die, our season is over and we go home to be with the Lord, which essentially has been my long-term objective for the last 50 years. I mean, I've lived my whole life in anticipation of one day going to be home with Jesus. And I don't want to make decisions based upon fear or the threats that some scientist or doctor renders. So again, I say to you, I'm not a medical professional. I've just shared with you what I've dug out in my own copious research. Don't base your decision upon my personal convictions. Seek God, pray as we have, and let your Holy Spirit inspired and informed conscience be your guide in all of these things. And I'm sure that He will be faithful. But I think it's also important for us to recognize that we're going to probably see more and more challenges like this. And in some ways, I think we as Christians are being prepared and being really tested and built up so that we'll stand fast in the day of adversity. One of the thoughts that came to me as my wife and I were praying this morning about this whole issue was that how God had the ability to really humble Nebuchadnezzar. And sometimes we look at the people who are in power and we think, God, they seem beyond the reach of any kind of accountability. Well, Nebuchadnezzar was just that individual. Nobody could tell him anything he didn't want to hear or make him do what he didn't want to do. And he had the ability to make them under threat of pain and death to do what he wanted them to do. And yet God struck him down and made him dumb as a beast. And I simply pray that God would have that same judgment upon many of these people we have in places of political power and economic power, that God's hand of judgment would be against them and He would strike them down and make them incapable of continuing to bring forth their atrocious behavior and decisions. Keeping in mind that when Nebuchadnezzar came out of his induced insanity, he was humbled before God and he glorified God. And that's what my prayer is, that people like the leaders of our current regime in this country or whatever country you happen to be in right now, start praying that God would bring Nebuchadnezzar's judgment on them to lead them to repentance and turn them away from the darkness. And if that doesn't happen, it's probably a good indication that God is saying the end is near and things are going to get worse and worse. And so we should be praying, come quickly, Lord Jesus, come quickly. So I hope that gives you some solace and some direction for your own prayer life. And thank you for taking the time. I know this has been lengthy, but I didn't feel like I should give any short, quick answers to what I think is an increasingly complex issue. Many blessings and go in His grace.